simple rule of thumb is that if you repay your loan over the standard 10-year period, it's $10 per month per thousand. So in your example, if you've borrowed $30,000 and you're paying it back over a 10-year period, the payment will be about $300 a month.
That sounds like a lot to me.
Yes, it is. And it is not unusual to see some professional careers come in with $60,000 or $100,000, and then you're talking some really sizable monthly payments. Now, the natural reaction then is to try to see if they can refinance it and pay it back over a longer period of time, but that is when you end up having to defer buying a home or starting a family because you're going to be paying back these student loans and paying much more.
And do you have concerns about the size of the loans that people are taking out these days?
Here at RISLA, we're very concerned about the amount that people are borrowing, and this has been a concern of ours for 20 years. So close to that time ago, we started a financial literacy program where we would go out actually to high schools and colleges and provide financial literacy training for the students and also working with parents. Many people talk about the amount of money that students borrow, but we're also very concerned about the amount that parents borrow for their children's education. There's over 100,000 parents who have had some portion of their Social Security payments garnished for lack of payment on federal loans.
Now, in your view, how much is too much to borrow?
Well, that's an excellent question, and one that people have really sort of dared to begin to speak about. There's a couple of financial aid experts nationally who have come up with a very good rule of thumb that we kind of agree with, that students, at least, should not look to borrow more than what they expect their first year starting salary to be. And the reason is that if they borrow, you know, $30,000 and they expect to have a job that starts at $30,000, they probably can afford, given, you know, no unusual circumstances, to pay that back in a 10-year period, which is a reasonable period of time. We are really concerned when we see people turning student loans into what are essentially long-term mortgages paying back over 20 or 25 years. The interest cost of paying back over that period of time is astronomical.
And, of course, the money you borrow, I mean, you take a loan out for your first year of a four-year degree, and mm-hmm. that interest starts to rack up right away.
Yes, it does, except in the case of subsidized Stafford loans, which are really have a need-based element to them. All the other loans out there, federal or non-federal, the interest pretty much starts accruing day one. So my daughter, who graduated last May, says, "Dad, I wish I'd started paying the interest while I was in school on those." And I go, "Yes, Caroline, but, you know, you didn't listen."
It's kind of a bind, though, right, for the students? Because here you are, you're trying to get your education, focus on your studies. Maybe you're even working part-time to pay for some of your living expenses. Mm-hmm. How are you going to pay back interest on a loan at the same time you're doing those other things?
Well, that's exactly the case. And to be realistic, most students do not make payments while they're in school. However, loans that parents take out, we try to encourage them to start making payments, even if they've co-signed the loans with their student. That's one way of them sort of helping the student not to increase the debt burden that they both shoulder.
And what's the typical amount of time that it takes your borrowers to pay back these loans?
Parent loans, federal plus loans, or some of our non-federal loans, most people tend to pay them back over a 7 or 8 year time period. Obviously, the word is getting through, and people are realizing that they can save a great deal of interest costs if they can once in a while or even monthly add a little bit extra to their monthly payment.
That sounds like a great idea if you have the means to do it, but what options are out there if you don't have the means to do that?
A couple of years ago, we instituted what was called income-based repayment, very similar to what the federal government has. What it does is just allow those individuals who have gotten into unforeseen difficulties to adjust their payments down in more proportion to what their income is. And we also work out payment plans with individuals and such. The default rate for our loan program since inception is just a little over 2%. So, yes, it's very, very low in a fraction of what it is, the federal loans nationally. And I think that is really because, number one, we try to discourage people from borrowing more than they should. And also, when they do get into difficulties, we work with them on extended repayment plans. We're going to be doing refinancing starting shortly of education loans to try to lock in a fixed interest rate. And this is also key, we think, going forward. Interest rates are very low right now, but as interest rates increase, so will your monthly payment. So right now, the only loans we make are fixed-rate loans so that people benefit from today's low interest rates. And we're going to be trying to refinance other education loans from maybe a variable rate to a fixed rate.
Do you see increasing default rates? I mean, the average default rate you mentioned is very, very small. But are those numbers starting to move now?
Well, much of the default rates that you see really are somewhat dependent upon the economy, whether students can obtain a job after graduation, whether parents can keep their employment. But we're actually, over the last few years, seen a positive development. And if there was anything positive that came out of the 2008 credit crisis, is that when we used to counsel families to maybe consider a state school or a two-year associate's degree and then transfer maybe to a four-year institution, that was not received very well. Now people are really seeing the value. It can save them tens of thousands of dollars in tuition costs. Is it ideal? Of course not, but neither is going heavily into debt.
Really? So before this economic downturn, families were not receptive to that idea?
No. It was sort of the boom times when people were buying more of a house than they could afford. Maybe in some cases people were buying more of a institution than they could afford.
That's Charlie Kelly, Executive Director of the Rhode Island Student Loan Authority. If you missed any part of our series, Paying For It, Rhode Islanders Struggle with Student Debt, you can find all of the stories at our website, ripr.org. I'm Elizabeth Harrison.
Education reporting on Rhode Island Public Radio is funded in part by a grant by the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation, and New England Institute of Technology's Center for Technology and Industry.